We'll officially call the Tax Committee meeting to order. We don't yet have a quorum, but Representative Erickson, if you'd like to start. After we get a quorum, we will move your bill for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Erickson, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Actually, Representative Dammer. I think this will be the trickle-in legislator.
What would you like me to do for you?
Well, maybe after I'm gone, you'll move my bill. This is House File 2335, which is a continuation of many others that this committee has heard this session. It provides a sales tax exemption for construction materials and equipment for a wastewater treatment facility and a public safety building for the city of Princeton. You'll notice that I did have a fiscal note prepared, and that the material supplies and equipment that would be taxable will equal $8 million of the total $19 million cost. The projected timeline for this project would be starting this August and completing in August of 2011. Then the public safety building, at a projected cost of between $5 and $6 million, we'll have material sales and equipment that would be taxable at without the exemption of $3 million. So that, Madam Chair, is House File 2335, and I know you'll do whatever you're doing with all these exemption bills.
All right. Questions from members? Representative Dammer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, is this a refurbishment or is it a brand new facility? What's the project?
Madam Chair and Representative Dammer.
Erickson.
These are two brand new facilities. Princeton is on the growing edge of the 13 county area. Mille Lacs County and Sherburne County share of the city of Princeton. And we have dire need of a new wastewater facility. I think we're in line for some WIF dollars, too. So, and I'll probably consider this in the bonding bill. And our public safety facility is an old clinic. And we really do need to provide a better public safety facility, because we serve 169, U.S. Highway 169, and Minnesota 95, and 47 isn't too far away. 27, 23, 25, they're all highways that intersect in the northern part of Mille Lacs County. So we have a lot of Minnesota troopers who need to headquarter in Princeton to take care of their official business and sometimes house prisoners, and we've not been able to do any of that. So two brand new facilities.
Further questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? All right, seeing none, Representative Erickson, as soon as we get a quorum, we will move your bill for possible inclusion. All right, Representative Anzel. Representative Anzel, we don't technically have possession of your bill, and so this will be an informational hearing for members. So, Representative Anzel, go ahead.
Thank you very much, members. This is House File 213. It involves communities and townships on the western Mesabi of the Iron Range, and it would reauthorize and authorize a levy for something called the Lake View Cemetery Association. And the history of this very briefly goes back to 1994, when a couple of the local units of government were authorized to levy a tax and to contribute to the Lakeview Cemetery Association. They were allowed to appropriate up to $15,000 for maintenance and upkeep of the cemetery during the days when Representative Solberg represented these jurisdictions and this cemetery. Then in 05, the amount that could be levied was increased to $25,000. And today, House File 213 includes additional communities and townships, allows for the creation of a special taxing district and a joint powers board. It includes no maximum amount, no ceiling that could be levied. And it's essentially for maintenance and upkeep of a community cemetery that's been in existence for several decades and would allow communities to participate.
Representative Cole.
Representative John.
Go ahead, Representative Cole.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ansels, do we do this anywhere else in the state? Are there other cemetery associations that have levy authority?
Representative Ansels.
Madam Chair and Representative Coles, I'm going to defer to Representative Solberg because I don't know.
Madam Chair.
Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, this is somewhat of a unique cemetery. Instead of having a community, each town having a cemetery or township having a cemetery or churches having their cemetery, this one is established when the ranges opened up back in the early 1900s. Otten 6 or Otten 2 or something like that. And it's a combination of many communities, Calumet, Marble, Bovee, Coleraine, so forth, and they established this. It's a fairly large cemetery, but I think there was a clarification needed back in the 90s. And keep in mind that at that time, I think the Tacony towns were under levy limits. At least at one time they were. Or some difficulties in clarification of what they could use that for. I think that the first time was a clarification that they could support that, and now there's just kind of the other townships are saying let's spread that out more equally. So I don't know, to answer your question, if there's another one like it, but it's also a very big, large community.
Representative Cole.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Solberg, and. You know, if we got a community that wants to support its cemetery through a local cemetery through property tax levy, I'm not sure that I necessarily have a problem with that. But I guess what I'm concerned about is we're creating a new taxing authority here. And if I understand Representative Ansel's testimony, and as I look at the bill, we're creating a new taxing authority that doesn't have any limit in terms of the ability to levy. We probably have a very interesting, unique, historic cemetery which is a great thing. But what we're doing here, if I understand Representative Ansel's bill correctly and his testimony correctly, we're allowing these communities to levy as much as they want to make that even cooler, more historic, and even better. I'm not sure that's a real good policy decision for this legislature to be making. So, Representative Ansel, I have some concerns about the bill. I have some family history in the funeral business, so I hope there's a nice plot for me somewhere. Hopefully not too soon, but at some point in time, I hope there's a nice plot for me somewhere in a beautiful cemetery, maybe overlooking a lake or something like that. But I'm not sure that we ought to be creating a new taxing authority with unlimited ability to go and go after people who may or may not be using this community cemetery. I have to imagine there's a couple church cemeteries up in this area as well, and maybe someplace else for these people to end up. But I'll leave it at that, Madam Speaker or Madam Chair. I know that we're laying this over, and we're not going to be voting on it now. In fact, I think you said we don't even have possession of it. So I'll leave it at that. But Lex Manzel, I think there are some issues and some policy issues. Again, I'm sure it's a cool cemetery. I'm sure it's historic, etc., but not sure this is the right way to go.
All right, well, I have a list here. Representative Earhart, you're next.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wondered if we couldn't work in a local option sales tax for the cemetery as well. We need, of course, a vote of the folks that utilize the property before coming to the state to ask permission. And that may be more difficult to obtain. But.
All right. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Markow was bothering me here, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. Actually, I think I was bothering him. Actually, I was bothering him. But actually, I just
I'm curious about the makeup of the cemetery association and how it would be run. We're talking about the possibility of a taxing authority here. It appears from what I'm seeing, joint powers indicates that maybe the municipalities that are forming the association would maybe put people on the board. So they wouldn't be directly elected officials or elected people. And I'm just, again, going back to the policy of a taxing jurisdiction that's where tax levies are being determined by people who haven't been elected by, you know, so the accountability piece. You know, you got a board, Joint Powers Board here that's appointed by the other jurisdictions. It's almost like you have a, and I'm sure it's almost like a incentive factor there that while they're doing it, then they can say, well, we're appointed by them. And comments on that, Representative Ansel?
Representative Ansel.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Demmer, I don't propose to know everything there is to know about joint powers boards, but I would assume that in order to levy, that the joint powers board would include only elected officials from the local units of government that would be involved in this taxing district. I would add that this has been in existence. This cemetery association has been in existence, as far as I know, since 1994. All we're doing in this legislation is increasing the number of local units of government that may, by resolution, decide to opt in to the association and be taxed for care and maintenance and upkeep of the cemetery. And secondly, we're asking that the Joint Powers Board be expanded to include representation from all the units of government. The obvious additional issue is we don't, as of yet in this bill, create an amount of money, a maximum amount of money that we would levy for. Because quite frankly, it depends upon how many local units of government opt in.
Follow-up, Representative Demmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And again, it's more, none of us really know how this all works, Representative Stell. Well, some do. I'm just figuring it out, too. But one of the things that comes to mind, I assume this would be a property tax levy. How would that work, and Representative Ansel's or maybe even Ms. Baker might have some thoughts about it. How does that work with truth and taxation hearings and that sort of thing? Does this, if this is in place and if they're levying property tax, we now have legislation if that goes through where they can all get together. But would they have their own truth and taxation hearing where they would answer to people in terms of what they're levying for and how that works, just like schools and counties and cities and townships and that sort of thing?
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, reinforcements have arrived, so I'm going to defer.
Ms. Baker, go ahead.
For the record, my name is Karen Baker from Host Research. To answer a couple different questions, one is that joint powers generally or almost always don't have the power to tax. What they have is they get their authority from all of the cities and townships and counties that participate as part of the joint powers. And so that particular board asks each of the counties or each of the cities, you know, we need X amount of dollars raised, and the various cities and towns raise those dollars. And so at the truth and taxation hearings, it's part of the county levy or part of the city levy or part of the township levy. What this particular bill does is it makes a real exception, and it says, in this case, the joint powers has its own taxing authority. And so it doesn't have to go to the cities or towns and get their authority. However, it does give them a provision that a city or town can drop out of it. And it does it in a, you know, although it says it, it allows it to be to for them to drop out. There's no time specific or anything, which I would think would cause a little bit of a problem, because from a planning standpoint, I would think you'd want, you know, a year's notice or something, just so you could, you know, do a little planning for what dollars you need if you went to purchase something. Let's say you purchase a piece of equipment or a tractor or something for the cemetery. I think you'd want to, you know, figure out. From a planning standpoint, this particular bill was patterned almost exactly word for word off of the Greenway Joint Recreation Board, which is an old 1981 law, And that particular law originally did have a 3.5 mills. That's back when we were in the old mills. And for some reason, when it was amended in 1994, it just struck the mills, so it took away any maximum. And whoever drafted this and or, you know, said, this is how we want to pattern it, just looked at this law and said, oh, we'll just do it exactly the same way. And I think that's probably one of the reasons, or probably the primary reason, why this one doesn't even have a limit, because they were just looking at the old law and just kind of copying it pretty much verbatim. So, on the other hand, it also didn't make any reference to what is out in special laws, which is what the representative has already referred to, which I think also needs to be addressed somehow, as to whether or not those old laws, if you repeal those, or what do you do with those other ones that are out there. So,
Representative.
If I could, Madam Chair, I guess I don't have a question. I'll just share a thought. I served on a couple of joint powers boards, and as you said, and the one thing I always thought was kind of neat about those, the way they work, you kind of like, I felt like when I was going representing my either city or school board, whoever I was there representing, I kind of like came with my check, and then I was there representing my board on this joint powers board and kind of putting my two cents in based on what my other jurisdiction was saying. And then when I went back to my monthly meeting, my school or city or whatever it was, then I would say, what's going on there? And there was an interconnectivity there, and there was actually a dependence, if you will, and an accountability, I think, that was pretty important. And so I guess I don't know if this is good or bad or in between, but I think it is a pretty new concept, and I think it takes some... Take some thought before we jump into this, Madam Chair. I think is what I'm thinking.
All right, Representative Solberg.
Just a couple of thoughts, and in our area, there's two or three other cemeteries. The Grand Rapids Cemetery is run by Grand Rapids Township, and it has taxing authority for that particular cemetery. It was in the town board. Harris Township owns a cemetery. That township has its taxing authority. This is an attempt to kind of mirror that as well, as I understand it, but not having it on one particular, the cemetery itself is located in Iron Range Township, which is kind of unique in that it's not, Taconite is not separated from Iron Range Township, and Marble and Calumet are not separated from Greenway Township. And there's about six of those in the state where the city is not separated from the township. And so this is an attempt, I think, on their half to say there's not just one entity that's servicing the cemetery, but there are several entities serving the cemetery, and it's trying to say, okay, if you want to belong to this, then we'll have this taxing authority and spread it out over. That's what the attempt, I think, is to be made on that.
All right, thank you. Members, we do officially have a quorum, so I will officially call the meeting to order. We have already heard Representative Erickson's bill, so I would quickly entertain a motion to move that bill. Representative Demmer moves House File 2335 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and I will lay that bill over. Representative Anzalk, any last closing comments?
Well, Madam Chair and members, this cemetery has been in existence since the turn of the century. There has been levy authority in the past. It's a work in progress, and I'd sure appreciate you helping me keep hope alive here.
All right.
And we'll continue to work on the language.
All right. Thank you, Representative Anzalk. We do not technically have possession of this bill, so it was an informational hearing. Representative Broad, are you still in the room?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Sure.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Broad moves House File 2411 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a very clear bill. I think we've heard a number of these exemptions for wastewater treatment facilities, and so this is just one more of those. The City of New Prague is looking at expanding its wastewater treatment facility. We are in an area of high growth, and so this is necessary for our city to operate in a way that is good for water, good for the citizens, and good for our town. So I sure would appreciate the support of the chair and committee members going forward. I would love to see us do a broader expansion, but short of that, I know that each one of us must advocate for our communities, and so this is just one exemption that I hope that we can find room for in the omnibus tax bill. So thank you for your consideration.
Question from members? All right, seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? All right, seeing none, Representative Broad renews her motion that House File 2411, we'll just lay over House File 2411 for possible inclusion.
That'd be great.
Oh. All right, I see Representative Swigum in the audience. All right. Is there a motion for possible inclusion for Representative Swigum's bill? Oh, we don't have it. I guess this is also, it's being introduced today, so we do not yet have possession. So, Representative Swigum, go ahead.
Sheets I have up warm. Chairman Hillstrom, the city of Goodview is a city of about 4,500 people right on the boundaries of Winona in southeastern Minnesota. The city of Goodview for the past few years has been given a ultimatum, I guess, a mandate by the federal government that we do not quite meet the EPA standards for radium, for radium content in the city's water supply. In all fairness, in all honesty, although I'm not an expert and the mayor's not an expert and City Administrator Dan is not an expert, we question whether that radium standard is an appropriate one or not, but it is the standard. The feds are forcing the city to put in some new water treatment facilities to reduce this radium content. A few parts per billion or million, whatever it may be, it's certainly questionable in my mind, yet it is the law, it is the EPA standard, and the city is going to have to be putting forward about $4 million for two water treatment facilities located in the town to meet the EPA standard. The measure before you, Madam Chair and members, would just simply be to allow a sales tax exemption for this mandate that has to be met. It's a federal mandate, not a state mandate, but still it's a governmental mandate that we have to meet with the water treatment facilities. And I do have the city administrator with me if you want him to say a quick word. I tried to call him this morning at 5:30, but I didn't have his number, and he was here at 8 o'clock. Thank you for saying that. As you know, when we left last night, we were getting a hold of no one to let him know that the meeting time had been changed a little bit. So thank you for giving Dan a second, just because of the time frame that we cost him.
Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dan Mateka. I'm the city administrator for the city of Goodview, and I think the representative has hit the nail right on the head as far as where this has all come from. We need to be in compliance by July of 2009. We are estimating, we are with our city engineer right now, a total cost of $4 million. Our total budget of all of our funds is just over $2 million. We are working with our national legislators right now, Congressman Waltz and Senators Klobuchar and Coleman, to get some federal assistance. Each of those three individuals have filed appropriation request forms on our behalf. And so we are here to ask for help from you, and I want to thank you for giving me the time to speak.
All right. Questions from members? Representative Walschlager.
Chair members, Representative Swigum, and I'm sorry, how do you say your name again?
Dan Mateka.
Mateka, Mr. Mateka. Well, thank you for coming at 8 a.m. and waiting for us. My only comment is that you are the second city this session to come for help or assistance on radium, so I don't want you to feel that you're alone on that. And
that's good to know.
It is interesting. It's a naturally occurring material, and how it's showing up in the water systems is of interest to me. I know it's not of interest to everyone, but anyway, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Cole.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Swigum and Mr. Mateka?
Correct.
This situation sounds incredibly similar to a situation that occurred in my district, the small town of Hamburg, Minnesota, which is a town of less than 500 people. in the the farthest part of the Southwest Metro before you leave the seven county metro area that you can get. They had a radium issue. My question, Representative Swigum, is, you know, they went forward and had to remedy the situation and didn't receive assistance from the state to do it. I'm not opposed to what you're trying to do in any way, shape, or form, but how do we, you know, how do I go back and talk to the folks in Hamburg about, you know, why we're providing this to communities now? And would you, Representative Strickland, be willing to support efforts that I may have to address this issue more broadly and potentially retroactively so that communities, I mean, if we make a decision as the legislature that this radium issue is something that we are going to help local units of government address, would you be willing to either sign on to a bill with me, Representative Swigum, or vocally support my efforts to address this retroactively so that we're treating all communities across the state of Minnesota similarly?
Representative Swigum.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm trying to think of how I'm going to tactfully respond here. Representative Cole is my good, good friend. First of all, the city of Hamburg.
You barely show tact, so why?
The city of Hamburg, as you know, plays great town team baseball, and I love the community there. In fact, we played a little baseball there. Representative Walshauger, you should also know that that Dan Mateka is also a football and a basketball referee, so maybe he's had your son once or twice.
If I may correct, it's basketball and baseball.
Oh, that's fine.
Close enough for government.
I get yelled at in both.
Representative Cole, to your question, I suspect that we want universality of law more than anything else. The universality of law is very, very important. And treating all folks in similar situations exactly the same would be very, very appropriate. I know that we have had various provisions in the past that at certain times have exempted certain communities and not others from a sales tax obligation, fair or unfair. You know, I would like to see it more universal. In fact, maybe we should try to move forward and get rid of that local government sales tax in general for everybody. And Representative Coles, although he's not interested in my response, if we got rid of that local government sales tax for everybody, which was a pretty stupid policy in the first place, I understand what happened, but, you know, what we do is, my simple mind is we raise local property taxes so the city could pay some sales tax to send it in the state, so the state can send out some additional aid in the form of LGA to reduce property tax. I think that's basically what happens. You raise property tax to reduce property tax and filter it through the state in between. So I think universality of law is very, very important. I would support that, Representative Coles, especially if we could do it on a statewide basis. Now, do you want me to be untactful? No, okay, I will not. Because Representative Broad knows where I would be going in relationship to who was Representative Hamburg and why the bill would not have been here to help them.
All right, Representative Broad, is this to the point? Because otherwise Representative Earhart is first.
Oh, well, it's remotely to the point. Madam Chair and Representative Swigum, I just wanted to put on the table, while we're supporting a more broad type approach, B-R-O-A-D type approach. I also, whether it's radium or arsenic is an issue too in some of the communities. I have a community of about 500 that is having to put in a $2 million facility, and it's just unsustainable for some of these small communities when they already have rates that are higher than the surrounding areas. They already have some significant challenges in terms of getting these things built. So if we're supporting radium, we're not supporting radium, we're supporting dealing with radium. I hope that we can put arsenic in the mix as well.
All right, Representative Earhart.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that the EPA has finally discovered why that red glow you have when you holler at me is what it's about. It's because you've been ingesting too much radium.
I only react, Representative Earhart. I do not act, but I do react.
Representative Lynchesky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Ms. Dalton on this bill and all of the staff on many of the bills that are on the calendar today. These are most of them are bills that were brought to me in the last few hours, really. And so, Ms. Dalton, or in the middle of the night, I just want to thank you. I know Ms. Representative Swigum mentioned this. What time was that about, you think, that you told me about Goodview?
11 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning.
And members and for the audience, to have these kind of materials prepared from both House Research and Revenue is quite impressive. So I just wanted to thank all the staff that's working at the very last minute to get these final bills heard.
Further questions from members? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Swigum, as soon as we get possession, we will lay it over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Representative Dalton. Excuse me. Mr. Dalton.
All right, I guess I'm next.
Thank you.
And Representative Hilstrom moves House Bill 2425 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And Representative Hilstrom, I don't know if you can tell us if you caught this, if Ms. Dalton caught this, if Mr. Shriver back there caught this. I think, members, this is one that we feel just got missed, and well, there needs some clarification. So Representative Hilstrom to House Bill 2425.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know who caught it, but congratulations to whoever did. This legislation provides a sales tax exemption for kidney dialysis equipment. It corrects an unintended consequence of changes made by the National Streamlined Sales Tax Agreement. This bill keeps the current practice of exempting kidney dialysis equipment, and this legislative change needs to occur this session, specifically by January 1st of 2008, to remain in compliance with the SSTA. The Department of Revenue has indicated no fiscal impact to this bill, and Pat Dalton from House Research can provide background for me.
Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in August 29, 2006, the Streamlined Sales Tax Agreement made some modifications to some of the definitions in the agreement, particularly as it related to durable medical equipment. Prior to that, durable medical equipment and prosthetic devices were defined but not really defined very well, and the Department of Revenue had interpreted kidney dialysis machines to be part of prosthetic devices. And with the new interpretation that was adopted in August, kidney dialysis machines are now durable medical equipment, and this state only exempts durable medical equipment for home use. So kidney dialysis equipment in standalone kidney dialysis centers was going to start being taxed if we didn't make this change.
Right. And that's it, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hilstrom. Other questions for Representative Hilstrom? Is anyone from the public who would like to testify for or against? If not, I'll lay over House Bill 2425 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We were looking for Representative Mullery. Who knows where members are today? And I think Representative Dabney has agreed to do Representative Mullery's bill here. And there's probably either Mr. Hines or Ms. Baker who probably knows this bill the best. So I just asked Representative Dabney if he could do this bill. So we may need House Research to comment on it. And then with that, Representative Dabney moves House Bill 1685. Representative Dabney.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I am just going to throw this to staff.
Ms. Baker?
This is the bill regards Hennepin County's Housing Redevelopment Authority and its powers.
Thank you. Mr. Michael will respond. And I should say, members, this was also caught by staff, I believe Representative Hill's from staff, at the last moment that this bill went to directly to the calendar there. We wanted to make sure the tax levy implications got run by the committee. And after working with Representative Hilstrom and Representative Mueller on the floor yesterday, we will just keep it here and lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill rather than have it go alone. So it would be my intention to include it in the bill. To that, Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I can't recall. I think in the past, I know this bill has been heard in the past, and it may have been included in a public finance bill in the past. But what this relates to is the Hennepin County HRA and its powers. And when this authority was created, there were restrictions put on the Hennepin County HRA, limiting its ability to operate in, I can't remember, in a handful of cities that have HRAs that were established before 1971. I don't remember. I know Minneapolis is one of them, and I think there are a couple of the suburban Hennepin County cities that are as well. And essentially, what this bill does is to strike that limitation and allow the Hennepin County HRA to exercise its powers in Minneapolis and these other affected municipalities, the sort of the same way any other county HRA would operate in another, you know, under other authorities.
Questions for Representative Dabney? Anyone from the public who would like to testify for or against House Bill 1685? If not, I'll lay over House Bill 1685 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And next we're going to go to Representative Dabney's bill, which hasn't received its bill number yet, and was, again, the staff working diligently yesterday with Representative Dabney and I and Mr. Michael came up with this language yesterday in the retiring room, and it's being jacketed now, I believe. But we wanted to hear it before we finished hearing bills. I do want to mention, if I may, Representative Dabney, that members should look at the minutes of April 11th, 12th, 13th, and 16th in their packets. I won't take a motion to approve them yet because those tend to be long, complicated minutes because those were long meetings. So if people want to glance at them before we approve them, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The clearest question embedded in this bill is, who owns your mutual fund? If you own 100 shares of Acme Large Cap Fund, do you then own the fund, or does the board of Acme Large Cap Mutual Fund own that fund? If you are the owner, then that changes the sales factor and taxation under this bill. Frankly, members, I worked up a brief description of this bill last night on the floor, and about 5 minutes after I did that, Mr. Michael sent his text over, and it's so far better than anything that I came up with. I am going to ask Mr. Michael to review this for members, because you can do a better job than I.
Mr. Michael, and in a little context for members, because of the hour, I didn't rise and talk about it, but when Representative Earhart had his amendment, as Representative Paulson had one too, on the mutual fund fee, part of the speaking points in Representative Earhart's documents during that debate addressed this issue, actually, for Ameriprise and formerly Lutheran Brotherhood Thrivent, who's now Wisconsin. But that's part of the concern in this issue, and it's something because we're hoping to deal with FOCs and single sales factor both in this committee this year, that it leaves this company in a difficult situation. So, Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, what this bill does is to modify the sales factor that's used under the apportionment formula to determine how much of a corporation's income is attributable to Minnesota. And it's useful in thinking through this to think through the structure of the mutual fund industry. As Representative Dabney indicated, in general, a mutual fund is a corporation that has shareholders, which is taxed on a pass-through basis under federal law. The shareholders are the investors that have, you know, purchased shares to make an investment in the mutual fund. Mutual fund almost always purchase services from a service company that does things like provide investment management, determine what stocks or bonds to buy, for example, as well as providing administrative services and distribution services. So the service company will, you know, accept the contributions, keep records, send statements to shareholders, and so forth. What's at issue here is when the management company sells these services to the mutual fund itself, which is the corporation that consists of it has a board and it has the shareholders who are the investors. The question is, what's for the sales factor for that corporation selling the service? Where are those sales sourced to, or what's their situs? Under Minnesota law now, it basically depends upon where the location of the mutual fund is, where its principal offices are, and where its board is located. What this bill proposes to do is to say, as Representative Dabney sort of suggested, well, really, what the company is doing is selling service through to the shareholders, not to the not to the board, for example, because they're the real beneficiaries who are consuming the investment management services and so forth. And so in this, so if I take an example of a mutual fund that's located in Minnesota but has shareholders all across the country, if the management company is in Minnesota and then provides the services to the board in Minnesota, those sales under current law would be Minnesota sales, but under this proposal would be apportioned out based on where their shareholders' residence are. And of course you can think through, if you're talking about a Boston-based mutual fund, for example, with shareholders across the country, including Minnesota, in that case, some of their sales would be sourced, under the current law, they're sourced to Boston where the services are provided and sold, whereas under this proposal it would depend upon where the residence, the mailing addresses are of their shareholders. So that's the, and it, as we rely more heavily upon sales apportionment as we go to single sales, this obviously becomes a bigger issue because more corporate income will be apportioned based on the sales factor, which is what this relates to, rather than on where the property and payroll of the corporation are.
Questions for Representative Abney?
Madam Chair?
Welcome. Yes.
I do have with me today Brian Peach, representing Ameriprise Financial, Minnesota's newest Fortune 500 company, as of this week's release of the new Forbes 500 list.
Thank you.
Welcome and congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
I don't know if you want to speak to the bill.
Yeah, this is just a very important bill to us, and I appreciate the consideration of the committee. As it stands now, we're being penalized for having two corporate entities in the state of Minnesota with the sourcing requirements on this. And what's happening is, as current other states are moving forward, we're subject to double taxation because their sourcing laws are where we're trying to go with this, saying that the underlying purchaser of the mutual funds is the actual shareholder. So 17 states right now have that law on the books. We're subject to paying all of our taxes on the income based in Minnesota and on our shareholders based in those states. So it's putting us at a competitive disadvantage, and we'd like to free up that revenue and invest more in Minnesota and climb higher up the Fortune 500 list. So,
thank you for that question. Anyone from the public who would like to testify for or against this House Bill XXXX? Representative Emmer.
Well, Madam Chair, I can't help but comment. Representative Dabney, it's just great to see you representing these businesses and doing the right thing. There's a lot of hope for you, Representative Dabney.
It's a growth opportunity, Representative Dabney, and it's an opportunity I've embraced.
If there's nothing else, we'll lay over this bill for a possible inclusion. Oh, I'm sorry. Was there someone? I apologize.
Madam Chair, I just wonder, is this now 100% on where the sales are? Is that what we're... Or am I misinterpreting what's...
I want to correct myself. We haven't moved the bill because we don't have the bill, so we're going to lay it over when we actually get it. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, these corporations, like all other C corporations, apportion their income based on, in Minnesota now, on a combination of property, payroll, and sales. This bill just affects the definition of the sales factor. Of course, in law, by 2014, it will be exclusively on sales, but not until then. So these companies would also use their property and payroll as well.
Okay.
And Representative Earhart, were you just trying to figure out if your bill was going to be an anonymous tax bill there? Was that...
What I'm wondering is if this was a special exception to the general apportionment factor that everybody else is going on.
Mr. Michael.
It's still going to be the same as anybody else, 80-20 or whatever it is now. I can't remember.
Mr. Michael, did you want to clarify that?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, essentially what this does is modify how we define sales, which is a long, multi-page definition designed to cover all sorts of different circumstances. The provision that we have in law now sort of was the standard where, for most service provision, it was sort of, it's usually based on where the services are provided, as opposed to sort of where they're consumed or where the, you know, and so this is just you know, a couple of exceptions to the sort of the general rule. It's very easy with tangible property because you're shipping something and it's the destination of the buyer. With services, it's more difficult to say, well, where's the buyer located? What's exactly the situs of this transaction?
Well, Ms. Rutherford, I may not ask you this correctly, but we have a formula we're phasing out now.
Thank you.
Is this phased out with the rest, or is this 100% now?
Representative,
are we making an exception to the phase out for this type of company, or no?
Representative Earhart, my understanding is this is not an exception.
Okay.
It's a definitional change, and the phase out, whether it all happened tomorrow or over many years, is independent of this. But it is my hope that this committee will determine that we should move faster towards single fails. It exacerbates the problem. I think it's helpful if maybe Mr. Michael could just take a minute to clarify. This is Ameriprise who brought this to the attention of Representative Dabney and I. However, it would affect any Minnesota company in this situation. But maybe just a minute or two, Mr. Michael, on Department of Revenue versus Lucerne Brotherhood and kind of what happened there. And, you know, they're not a Minnesota company now, in part because of the way we're treating and counting this sort of sales tax. Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, yes. Essentially what this does is to reverse a case, as you look in the bill summary, Lutheran Brotherhood Research Corporation versus the Commissioner of Revenue. In that case, the taxpayer argued that under current law, the purchaser of those services really was the mutual fund shareholders rather than the mutual fund entity itself. And the Department of Revenue took the opposite position, and the Supreme Court said under the existing statutory language that defines the sales factor, the entity is the purchaser, not its shareholders. And so this would essentially reverse that decision. And it does, as the Chair said, this just defines what sales are for purposes of the apportionment formula, and so the normal percentages will apply.
Okay.
Thank you. Further questions?
Yeah.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that there wasn't any ability to get any sort of revenue note on this, but I wonder if I'm understanding how this is all working, and I know we're all kind of struggling today to do that, as we move toward the single sales factor, this is going to become more important in overall. And so I'm just wondering if there's sort of any sense of what the cost of this might be.
I think we don't know, but by introducing a bill, we've got revenue off trying to figure it out now. And Mr. Manson's nodding. We thought preliminarily there were maybe a guesstimate of maybe $4 million benefit to Ameriprise. I'm just throwing that out there. And there would be a negative hit to some out-state companies, not Minnesota companies. So how those two play off to net out, we don't know yet. But we'll hear that from the Department of Revenue. So we expect there to be a cost in the bill. We'd have to find it in the omnibus tax bill. But if this is there for the consideration of the committee as we look at both FOCs and single sales. So there should be both a cost and a revenue stream, probably netting out at a cost to the bill. But that's all we know. Does that help clarify?
Madam Chair.
Representative Abney.
Madam Chair, Mr. Peach shared with me earlier that California, only very recently as I understand it, went to this sort of statute for apportioning sales for mutual funds located in their state and taxpayers there. Through their methodology, which may differ, I grant, they actually project a net benefit to the state, a net increase in revenue. Where this will net out is unclear, and I'm going to leave it to the elves to figure that one out.
Mr. Michael, you want to take a shot at if it's going to be to the plus or the minus? And he thought maybe we could get Mr. Manson if he wants to come down and take a guess. I know no one likes to guess here.
Yeah.
So the answer is we don't know. Yes.
Well, thank you. But Madam Chair, from that I did get one important piece of information that I hadn't really thought about, which is that it affects outstate companies that sell here as well, which is something that had not crossed my mind until you answered the question, so thank you for that.
Mr. Michael, do you want to clarify how that tax burden would work?
Madam Chair, I think the sort of the simple example is to take a mutual fund management company and the funds. Again, we've got these two entities, the corporation that provides the services and then the funds themselves, many of which, if you know just from thinking about sort of name mutual fund companies, are located in states other than Minnesota, places like New York and Massachusetts and Maryland and California and so forth. Those companies under this, if they have nexus in Minnesota, now the way the sale is defined for the management company that's providing service to the fund, all of those sales will be sourced to wherever the funds have their principal offices. So if that's in New York or Boston or Philadelphia or wherever, those would be New York sales. Under this, if they have shareholders, and here we're talking retail shareholders, not people who own them through 401k plans, but people who own them directly, those would then become Minnesota sales, and so it would apportion more of their income to Minnesota. So you can just imagine thinking about sort of big name mutual fund companies, if they have nexus in Minnesota, so they're required to file a return and pay tax, that this will increase their tax, which will help offset the revenue loss that we will realize from our own local mutual fund companies.
Representative Wolfslager.
I have read and reviewed the minutes, and I'm prepared to move them.
Representative Wolfslager.
April 12th, yeah. And April 13th, and April 16th, and the 11th. And I would like to also commend Miss Finn, because she took out all the good stuff, and it's kind of dry, but that is the way it went. So,
thank you very much for that motion. Members, discussion to the motion. All those in favor, say discussion to the motion.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
All those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say nay. The minutes are adopted, and now to Representative Zellers.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and just I heard it once, and I wasn't sure, maybe it was in the haze, but I did hear it a couple of times. Just to be clear, these are out of state. Just in the event that we start regional warfare with greater and lesser Minnesota. Just wanted to be clear, we're talking about Minnesota versus those other states, not greater and lesser. North Dakota specifically represented.
And I think I was the offender. I said out state as opposed to out of state, which I have been, for years, been taught to say greater Minnesota. So I was actually referring to other states. However, Representative Zellers always raises the question that if those not in the metro are greater Minnesota, what is the metro? Is it greatest Minnesota? I don't know. Just teasing. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I was out of the room, and so if this has already been answered, but I don't need it again, I'll follow up with Mr. Michael and Ms. Dalton or the author. But is there a retaliatory impact with something like this, as there is with insurance taxes? I know this is somewhat different. I don't know if that question's been asked. If it hasn't, if it could be answered.
Thank you. It has not been asked, and I kind of thought of that insurance premiums too. But I think there is a little bit different. It's a little different, Mr. Mike.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, there is not a retaliatory issue here. And the reason for that is any attempt to do a direct retaliation would likely violate the Commerce Clause. Recall that the reason why that goes on in the insurance arena is because Congress has sanctioned it through legislation that grants an exception, and that does not apply here. So,
Thank you. Thank you, and thank you, Ameriprise and Representative Dabney, for bringing this to our attention.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. We'll lay this. Well, we can't lay it over. We don't have it. But when we get it, we'll move it and we'll lay it over.
All right.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
And last, we've got, I think last, House File 2434. I'm going to just stay right here and move my own bill. It's not. I don't know. It's being introduced today? Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. We can't move it, but Mr. Michael is going to go through this. And members, this is an a regular task of the Tax Committee, and this is the TIF technical bill. So these are not member bills on tax increment financing. These are technical, minor provisions, unless for some reason members read them and find out they're not minor. These are minor provisions that the Tax Committee likes to go through, and then if the Tax Committee is okay with it, we incorporate it into the TIF article of the Omnibus Tax Bill. So with that, we're going to just let Mr. Michael...
We do.
We don't like to, but we do. Mr. Michael, if you could walk us, I think, members, the best thing to do is walk through the summary. Thank you.
Madam Chair, knowing members' sleep situation, I'll try to run through this so that you guys can move on. This bill is put together by a group of from the State Auditor's Office and from cities and cities advisors, as well as legislative staff, and it is, as the chair indicated, intended to sort of make minor technical fix-ups in the tax increment law. The first one expands or changes the definition of redevelopment blight, the blight test, to allow, there's a special rule that if you demolish the building in anticipation of creating a TIF district, you can treat that building as substandard if you pre-qualified it. This just extends that rule to what's called the coverage part of the blight test. Section 2 makes a similar change. Section, one thing that this bill does, and there are several sections, and I'll talk about it once and then skip over the rest of them, is housing districts. There's an old sort of artifact of the what used to be called the state aid offset, where there's a category of housing districts that had tighter income limits, and we repealed, the legislature repealed that offset several years ago as part of the tax, the property tax changes. What this bill does is to get rid of that definition of qualified housing districts, and then several places throughout the bill says if you meet the regular housing district rules, then you satisfy those requirements. Section 4 just corrects a mistake and cross-reference. Section 5, a few years ago when we enacted the restrictions on using tax increment to pay for community centers, there were exceptions created for that for private conference facilities and parking facilities. The assumption always was that that applied to both private and publicly owned parking facilities, but it's susceptible to the interpretation that private conference facilities, the private also modifies the parking facilities, and this just clarifies that that's not the case, so you could, and many cities have for many years used tax increment to build publicly owned parking ramps, and this, you know, just continues that practice. Section 8, skipping over a couple more of the housing provisions, is a provision that might be worth noting, is Ramsey County has had a unique system of certifying original tax capacity. The Ramsey County property tax people wait until the value increases before they certify original tax capacity. No other county in the state does that. What this would do is to make it clear that Ramsey County is to act the way the other 86 counties have, because that does affect when the clock starts running on tax increment districts. Section 9 just inserts a couple of dropped words in a section. Section 10 is another housing district, and Section 11 is where the qualified housing district is actually repealed, and those are the provisions of the bill.
Representative Zeller.
Madam Chair, and I noticed Representative Dabney is in the room, and, you know, gosh, I just know in good conscience, I don't know if we can continue without his parking discussion on parking.
You know, Representative Zeller, where did Representative Dabney go? Because he actually came over to be on the floor with this TIF technical bill in his hand last night and diligently working. Yes, and he raised this. I'm not kidding. He raised this parking public versus private parking facility issue, and I said, well, we're going to go over it tomorrow. So, yes, he is obsessed with parking. I think that's clear.
Yeah, I'm sure I will acknowledge that. Representative Dabney has already contacted and talked to me about that, so he does understand the provision.
Thank you,
Representative. I don't know if he's okay with it.
Representative Hillstrom on that, to that point.
No, not to that point.
Madam
Chair, I just wanted to know if any of these changes are substantive or have any impact on current TIF districts, and if so, then are those grandfathered in, or is this going forward, or how does that work?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, that some of these provisions, the housing district, and this is relevant to Representative Hillstrom because she has, in fact, a special bill for the city of
Brooklyn Center.
That one of you have two bills for that city. One of those will be unnecessary, I believe, or at least parts of it will be unnecessary as a result of the changes that are in this bill, which has made it. There's language that makes it clear that it supersedes special laws and allows them to spend it on any housing district, whereas your city was subject to a restriction that they could only spend it on qualified housing district projects, and that's what your special bill would have changed. So I think part of your special bill is now unnecessary. There are a variety of these provisions do affect existing districts, but in general not in a way I think that any of these cities or advisors thinks would be harmful. Is generally beneficial, if similar to the situation in Brooklyn Center.
Good, thank you.
Representative Wolfsmeyer.
Oh, Chair members, I think my confusion was I was thinking of this as Job Z instead of TIF, so I'll pass.
Representative Earhart.
I'm really sure when we what do you call it? Summary, house summary, section 5, parking facilities. I don't know if that's a double negative or what there is, but it clarifies that public parking facilities, including those in ancillary to public parks and social and recreation facilities, are not prohibited facilities that cannot be financed with increment revenues. Should that better be read, are not prohibited facilities and can be financed with increment revenues, am I understanding? If I understand it correctly, what is
it? Mr. Michael.
Maybe I should start over and say these are facilities that would be permitted to be financed with tax increment. That was a little inartful description of
okay.
What's the idea is to make it clear that publicly owned parking ramps can be financed with tax increment.
Okay.
Even if they are ancillary to one of these prohibited facilities. So, for example, okay, you cannot use tax increment to build a publicly owned community center, but you could build a parking ramp for that facility.
Okay, thank you.
Claire, Representative Wolfsmeyer, you mentioned.
Oh, I just like Como Zoo as an example or some.
For the questions on the TIF, Representative,
given the discussion between Representative Earhart and Mr. Michael, I think we may have identified that Mr. Michael is in fact human and has done something that is maybe not 100% clear. I don't know that I've ever seen that before. So, I think I understood what you wrote, but maybe it could be a little clearer. Mr. Michael, it's good to know you're human too.
You know, and now Representative Dabney's here, and as we finish the parking facility question, but you know, Representative Coles, Mr. Michael's actually made an error twice that I know of, and once is now. And the other is he transposed his wife's social security number, I believe, filed their taxes.
You're right.
He goofed up filing their taxes. Can you believe that? Well, that's amazing. Representative Dabney, we're going through the parking, public parking, private parking part of the TIF technical ballot. And Representative Zellers was concerned you weren't here, and I clarified to everyone that you brought it up in the middle of the night, and Mr. Michael clarified that, in fact, you talked to him about it this morning. But you have not missed a... any opportunity to talk about parking. Representative Davenport.
Madam Chair, first I just want to say that I take comfort in the fact that Mr. Michaels does his own taxes and doesn't find the process too complex and hire someone else. I think it would be in a bad way. I don't want us to go back over things, but there is a reference to parking in here. Page 7, lines, I think, 6 through 13. And we're going to be extending to line 7.6 to 717. And frankly, I read this last night, and I understood it, and then I read it over again to make sure I understood it, and I came to a completely opposite understanding. So, Mr. Michael, can you just clarify for me, please?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, it's probably useful to go through the history of this because it sort of explains how the drafting ambiguity was created and what the change is designed to clarify. I think in 2001, although I'm not absolutely positive about it, the legislature decided it no longer wanted to allow cities to use tax increment to build community centers with. And at that time, it was raised the possibility, and in doing that, the legislature said, well, we don't want to prohibit cities from building publicly owned parking ramps because that's something that cities have used tax increment for many years, usually in center cities. All of the first-class cities have done this in multiple projects. But someone also suggested, well, there are times when you want to use tax increment to build a private social or recreational or conference facility. And so language was added to the law that said, notwithstanding the fact that you can't use tax increment for publicly owned community centers and conference centers, you can use it for private conference facilities and parking facilities. The ambiguity results from, does private modify just conference facility, or does it also modify parking facilities? So the exemption would only have been limited to privately owned parking facilities. The change that's in the bill is designed to say, no, that's not what we intended retroactively back to the original change. It is permissible to use tax increment as part of, for example, a redevelopment project in a developed area to build a structured parking facility, even if it's publicly owned, and secondly, even if it's ancillary to one of these other prohibited facilities. So that's what the change does. And it's consistent with existing practice.
Perfect. Thank you very much, and Representative Zellers, thank you for having my back there.
Representative Zellers.
And Madam Chair, we searched the bill, and the only page I can find a rather tentative link to the watermelon pickle discussion is under definitions. A housing district is a single-family ownership project, and correct me if I'm wrong, if they're homemade watermelon pickles, and may be made in a single-family home. So just, if you need the bridge, I'm just saying it's not in the bill, but maybe under definition.
And of course, if they're homemade, they may also be sold at county fairs, roadside stands, and things like that because of Representative Junkie's good work on the pickle bill.
Yeah.
We're parking them.
Yeah, and you would have to park in order to purchase them, yes. Thank you, Representative Demmer.
And with that, unless there is public testimony on any of this, Mr. Representative Coles, Representative Simpson, and...
Just before we adjourn, Madam Chair, we can...
Okay, I have an announcement as well. Representative Simpson.
Before we adjourn, ma'am.
Okay, public testimony on the TIF technical bill. Anyone? That's nice. I'm glad there's not. Thank you. We appreciate that. And so when we get it, we'll lay it over. And I want to just mention to members that I met with Representative Simpson, and I just wanted to talk about next week so members can plan. Right now we're thinking we might meet in Texas on Friday. That's probably just to move these bills we don't have formally, and, you know, members are creative, whether it's in the middle of the night, last night, people have these urgent issues they still sometimes need heard, and if there's some compelling argument, we might need to meet in Texas. We hope not. The TIF working group will work tomorrow and hopefully make their decisions on Friday and then recommend that for part of the tax bill. As Representative Simpson and I talked, we're planning, and of course, you know, it all depends on what happens on the floor and all these things and how tired people are, but at this point we're planning to unveil the omnibus tax bill on Monday, the 23rd. We'd like to take public testimony on Tuesday, the 24th, and do the markup on Wednesday, the 25th. Then we hope to be done, except for the fact that we still have to do the public finance bill, so I think in deference to giving our staff time to recoup after the omnibus tax bill process, we wouldn't do the public finance bill until the following Monday, or maybe Tuesday, depending on how it works for Mr. Michael and his staff. And then I also wanted to mention that we will probably hear the Vikings that week sometime as well. And if the outdoor sales tax dedicated issue continues to move through a process, it will come here. So those are outstanding items. So we're not sure what we'll hear when, but that's kind of the plan for now. Representative Simpson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate you kind of giving everybody an outline of where we're going. I just wanted to talk a little bit about in our omnibus bill. One of the things that Speaker Sweden was in here with and talked about the bill that he had with the TIF. You know, in a perfect situation, we've had bills earlier about eliminating the sales tax on municipalities, and that's a big bite, and we know that. But as we've seen here, we've had quite a few cities coming in with wastewater treatments, with the various infrastructure uses. And if there's a way that we could afford to do something in our bill, I think maybe that would be a nice step to start going towards the elimination of the municipal sales tax. And I know it's costly, but I think it's as Representative Swigum stated, you know, we're taxing people to pay the tax, to give the tax back, and I mean, it's kind of a round circle we're playing. So I would just encourage you, if there's a possibility, to look at least this infrastructure. On a statewide basis, I think the infrastructure problem is just getting greater and greater and greater. So we're going to continue having cities coming back year after year, and if we could do something at this level, maybe this would be a good start. So with that, thank you.
Thank you for that, Representative Coles and Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if you can give us a little bit of insight. I know there was I believe it was Representative Dill's bill was put on the agenda, and then it was taken off. I don't know if you've had a conversation with Representative Dill, and if you can share with the committee whether that is something that is still, I'll use your term, outstanding, not that I necessarily think it's an outstanding provision, but that it's still out there and an issue. Representative Dill is here. Have you had a conversation with him? Is that going to come back before the committee? If so, when? Can you give us a little insight there?
Sure, yes. I forgot about that, and I appreciate you bringing that up. Some members may know that Representative Dill and I spent time yesterday on the floor trying to think through the issues that Representative Dill raised, and I was very compelled by what he was talking about during the Atkins bill to reduce the rates on charitable gambling. In that discussion, Representative Dill laid out the problem with the structure of how you have to reconfigure and break up these big charitable gamblings into smaller groups because the structure really forces you to, because you're going to lose money if you don't. And it just, as I listened to Representative Dill, I thought, that's crazy. So I called Representative Dill and said, we should come up with a way to fix that problem, the structure in the gross receipts tax and the gambling taxes, and also see if we could give some assistance to the smaller charitable gambling. And as many members know here, I've been the chief author of the Card Club for a number of rounds, and it's been included in the omnibus house tax bill in the past. So in my little workshop in my head, which is how to give you pause right there, I was thinking, okay, well, we could deal with the Card Club because, again, remember, members, this is not taxed, and I think it's the only similar facility in the nation that's not paying the tax there. And I think bipartisanly people have recognized that that's a problem. And so that would be one reform to gambling taxes, meaning that if you are a gambling facility that we have sovereignty over, we don't over Native Americans, but if we do, you ought to pay taxes. I mean, our charitable gambling organizations don't pay or are paying taxes, but our for-profit are not. So I thought this could be sort of a little group of, let's have them pay taxes because they're not. Let's have the The smaller gambling organizations get a tax break because they're struggling due to the arguments made on smoking ban and other things. And then let's fix the Dole issue that I think was the pure policy good argument. And so I was trying to work with him to combine those in one bill, which Mr. Michael came up with, and then we just talked about it back and forth on the floor and thinking, you know, is this committee ready for that? And then, of course, you can imagine what the reaction was from folks who were hearing about it out in the halls, and then people were saying, well, this, what about the horse track? And I thought, wow, I don't know that we can handle the whole gambling thing tomorrow. So Representative Dill and I both thought the better situation would be to not go forward with that today. I think we've had the discussion, so I think all amendments to the omnibus tax bill in any of those pieces, Dill's concern, the small charitable rate reductions, the card club, those are all options for committee members to introduce as amendments. But I thought my intention would not be, unless Representative Dill or any other author would like to introduce something in that area and still get it heard this week, we'd try to. But I was really moved by Representative Dill's discussion and did not really fully understand the situation for some of those organizations and was trying to correct a couple of things there. But maybe it's not ready for prime time. So thank you for raising it. Other questions? Representative Dameron, I apologize. Yes.
That's okay. Actually, I just comment too. on the card club thing, you know, if I remember right, when we had debate about that last year before, one of the compromises that was in play at one point was to remember tables and do the tax. And that, I know it enters another. And
another
put another dimension on the thing.
And Representative Dameron, I omitted that. That was another thing happening on the floor that all of a sudden it became a discussion, should we expand? And I thought, oh, man, we're going to be tired. We're not going to be ready for that. So you're right. I forgot that as well, that it would be an expansion of gambling debate as well. So Representative Dameron.
Anyway, just thought I'd throw that piece
in. Yes.
But the other piece I want to touch on, and Representative Simpson mentioned it, and it's about the municipal sales tax thing. I think... You know, as I was thinking through the earlier when we were going through the wastewater things, I thought, you know, this is the type of thing we're talking about. And we still, you know, oh, my mind was going, and here we got the whole tax dollars, chasing tax dollars again kind of thing. And, you know, one thought, Madam Chair, and this is a half-baked idea, so I'm not throwing it out as something I'm proposing, but would be to say if we took all of the wastewater infrastructures that you felt could be justified in the tax bill this year, and came up with a dollar amount and see how that would manifest itself in a lowering of the rate to all municipalities. So if you decided that X number of millions of dollars could be used for these wastewater deduction, or now what that would mean is that a given project wouldn't get their whole enchilada, but maybe that would result in municipalities getting a 4% rate instead of 6.5% or 5%, whatever it is. Just a thought. I don't know about the merits of that. I haven't thought it through very much, but...
I
was noticed on that path, Madam Chair.
And Representative Dameron, you and I have never talked about this, but I will share with the committee that is absolutely one of the things I'm thinking about. And all members shortly will see everything I'm thinking about. And I'm hoping, I should say, Representative Simpson knows this as well, that late Friday, your side of the aisle should know what's being contemplated in the bill in a general way, and we want to get reactions and then unveil on Monday. That's the goal. But... may not happen, depending on what's happening on the floor. So, yes, Representative Coles.
One last question, Madam Chair, about the markup of the omnibus bill. Do you have a sense, Madam Chair, can you give us your understanding of the House rules? Representative Solberg is in here. Representative Carlson is here. I believe that the Tax Committee has a target. If members have amendments related to provisions in the omnibus bill, for example, let's just assume that there's a provision in the bill that raises raises income tax. If a member were to have an amendment to get rid of that increase or to reduce that increase, are you going to require that in some way we balance that amendment so that we're raising additional revenue elsewhere? I don't think the rules require that, but can you give us some guidance walking into this? Because I don't want to be surprised. I don't want to have that debate and fight, discussion when they are actually marking up the bill. If that's going to be your position, I don't think the rules require that. I don't think that's been the way that the committee's operated in the past, but if you could give us a little guidance on that, I would appreciate it.
And I'll have Representative Carlson jump in here, too. I think you are right, Representative Coles, that those amendments would be in order. I should say the committee, the new rules, the yellow book, which I was looking for, and I guess it's over there, but you've got them there, Representative Coles. That's something else that's yellow. The committee rules in rule say that if you're going to have committee rules, you need to, I think, tell the speaker, notify them, and approve the rules for the committee in the committee. We didn't do that. That was intentional. Most committees have rules. We don't. And Mr. Stone knows that one of the rules in taxes is there's no rules. and I didn't want to change that. I didn't want to do the 24-hour rule on amendments, and I didn't want to make it harder. I mean, I think everyone knows that the tax committee and people want to be on the tax committee because it tends to be the last thing that closes everything up, and it gets very highly charged. And in general, we want most of those things in order. Now, to the whole rules for this committee and for the floor, I do think, in fact, that they have to balance on the floor. And we'll have to, I'll have to go back and read the rules. I'm happy to do it with you, Representative Coles, but I don't want to limit anybody's ability in here. That's never historically been the tradition here, and certainly not an omnibus tax bill. We've had this whole nuance this year of other omnibus bills, but this is the tax bill now, and we've been working on it all year. So I'm hoping to be just as open as I possibly can, but I would like to ask Representative Carlson if he's willing to talk about what he thinks might be the whole, how does it have to balance issue in the rule?
That's your, I totally caught what the question is. Yeah. If you're talking about the spending side in the bill, and it has to be within the bargain that's set by Ways and Means, and when the bill goes to Ways and Means, I don't know, do you serve Ways and Means? The first question that is asked there is your bill within your target. So, if your question is then with amendments that would increase the spending within the tax bill, would put it over the target, then it wouldn't be in order.
And Madam Chair, I think, and Representative Carlson, I think that I think I understand that. I think I appreciate that. I think I'm really focused. My question was focused a little bit more on the revenue side as opposed to spending. I know they're tied together. But, for example, the example I gave was if the bill proposes to raise new revenue, let's just say through the income tax, an amendment, as I understand Representative Macheski, an amendment to reduce the amount of new revenue being raised would not be out of order because it wouldn't impact the spending target of the bill. It would impact the amount of revenue the bill's raising, but it wouldn't impact the spending target if we're talking about new revenue being raised in the bill. So I think I understand. I think I understand where we're at. And I, that's my understanding of how the 4 years I've been on this committee have operated. I just wanted to get a little clarity around that before we march down the road.
That's the question. Is the bill out of balance? Yeah. Spending in the bill continue. For example, the property tax relief and the revenue stream that funds it were eliminated. I would argue you're out of balance at that point.
Representative Coles.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I might have a slightly different take on that than you. I think that the omnibus tax bill, I guess, could be said to be slightly unbalanced in some way. However, I don't think that the rules would preclude another revenue-raising bill from coming through to fund the expenditure. I think the target that we have is a spending target, and it's this committee, it's the legislature's responsibility to come up with the revenues necessary to fund the budget that we pass, whether it's done in one bill or two, whether it's done in the omnibus bill. So I think I understand what you're saying. The tax bill itself may be slightly out of balance, but I don't know that impacts our ability to offer those types of amendments in this committee or necessarily even on the floor. I'm not sure that... Of course, Speaker Kelleher would have the ultimate say on that issue, but I appreciate where Representative Lachesky is coming from, and I guess Representative Lachesky, my request would be that if your understanding of how the scenario that I just played out, if it changes between now and when we are going to be marking up the bill, if you could have that conversation with Representative Simpson or myself or the committee as a whole, I think that would be helpful so that I don't want to spend a lot of time when we're marking up the bill talking about procedural issues. I'd prefer to talk about the substance of the amendments and move through them. But if there's going to be this issue, let's try to get it on the table as soon as possible.
Representative Coles, and I agree, and I think we those interested, including myself, Representative Carlson, Coles, Simpson, and anyone else, maybe we should continue to talk about this a little bit, because I do agree, Representative Coles, that in this committee, I mean, we, unlike every other committee, we have both a revenue and a spending target. So we can do both here, and we're the only committee who can. So it allows members lots of leeway to do lots of things, and so I think you're right. We should continue the discussion so we don't waste a long time on it when we start. So thank you for that. Members, Representative Wolfsager, and then we're going to adjourn. Representative Wolfsager.
I can pass. But I do want to know, Representative Coles, are you suggesting, for example, that you could substitute, you don't like this income tax thing, so you could substitute the card tax? The card?
Well,
I mean, is that what you were getting at?
Madam Chair, Representative Wolfsager, I think the answer is twofold. I think the answer to the specific answer to your question is yes, but what I'm talking about is I think that this committee has the ability in the omnibus tax bill to not raise our entire revenue target.
Sure.
So I could offer an amendment on the income tax to either delete the increase in the income tax or reduce the increase proposed in the income tax, and that wouldn't that amendment would be appropriate. Now, we may have to come up with some additional revenue in another bill or some other way. Maybe we'll raise another fee in one of the other omnibus bills. We can have that discussion again. But we have to come up the House of Representatives has to come up with a revenue number at the end of the day.
Representative Carlson,
I think that's something that some of us will have to talk about so that we're on the same page. But as one member of the committee, I would have a different take on that. My take would be when this bill leaves the tax committee. You know, you referenced the second bill. I suspect that could be calculated in. We've done that with some other bills. There was an ag bill the other day, and some of the funding was carried in a different bill, but it was calculated within the target. But if you're going to have just one bill, when that bill leaves the committee, in my view, it has to be balanced. You can't provide property tax relief without the revenue to fund it when it leaves this committee. Now, if you had a second bill that was doing that, that perhaps could be calculated in ways and means, because you did reference the second bill.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just was hoping that maybe between now and the time that we actually take it up, that you could have these conversations so that we're all clear before coming in, before people are starting to draft their amendments. Because if you have two targets, I just want to know when I sit on Ways and Means as well, if you're going to be asked the question if you meet your target and whether you do or don't and how that's going to all play out. So it would be helpful if we all knew ahead of time before amendments were drafted.
Yes, and we do need to have this discussion, Representative Solberg has missed it.
Heard part of it.
Okay.
Maybe next year we can do it on the floor and we can let everybody know, including the public, how.
And I should say that the tax committee is very confusing for everyone to get their heads around because it's got both the spending and the raising side. And we don't have to raise all the money that some might want to raise. So that's, I think, we're historically we've always let people make these amendments here, and I don't think the rule would say that you could not. Ways and Means might be a different story, but in this committee, I don't know. So we'll talk about that further. So with that, we are adjourned.